We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hi, this is Luka Doncic.
Can he get it away in time on the step back? He does! He hits! He hits! And the Mavericks have won the game! Luka Doncic with a 30-footer to win it at the horn!
And you're listening to the Mavs Step Back Podcast.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome in to another episode of the Mavs Step Back Podcast. This is the latest installment of Mavs Step Back Live. I'm your host, Dalton Trigg. You can find all of my work at Dalton_Trigg on Twitter. I'm joined by my co-host, Matt Galatson, today. You can find all of his work at Matt_Galatson. Matt, we have a lot of stuff to talk about today. The Mavs, they just continue to impress with their amazing newfound defensive efforts. I read a really cool piece the other day, talking about, it was just kind of like, well, how do the Mavs have this elite of a defense despite not really having a true anchor? And I mean, it really is a case where every guy on the team is buying in. They're playing with high energy every night. I wrote that piece on DallasBasketball.com the other day. There's no participation trophies anymore. There's no, I guess it's kind of unfair to call it a gimmick, but in all reality, that's kind of what it was. The wrestling belt that the Mavs gave out for good defensive efforts last season.
I hated that.
That was one of those situations where it was just kind of like, oh God, can we please just get some kind of effort? We'll try and give out something to get it from the Mavs, but you don't have to do that anymore. Jalen Brunson, Luka Doncic, they've all said that it's expected on a nightly basis, and you can see that with how the Mavs have played here lately. They've won 11 of their last 13 games. Per StatMuse, I saw that on Twitter earlier today. For the last 23 games, I believe, they've held their opponents under 50% shooting, which is absolutely incredible. And, the defense continued last night when the Mavs beat the Grizzlies 104-91. And it was Ja versus Luka. Ja had a very respectable night in his own right. He was like the only bright spot for the Grizzlies. Put up 35 points of his own, but Luka, he had 37 points, 12 rebounds, and 9 assists. It was the 17th time in Luka's career where he has come up at least one rebound or one assist short of a triple double, which is very, very annoying from a OCD standpoint. But anyway. The Mavs are still playing great. They're 27-20 now. They're inching closer to the Utah Jazz, surprisingly, in the Western Conference standings. The Jazz are slipping a little bit, and Rudy Gobert, he strained his calf last night, and the Mavs still have 3 head-to-heads with the Grizzlies left in these remaining, 37 games of the season. So there is a legitimate shot that the Mavs could catch the Jazz and possibly the Grizzlies too. So what are your thoughts on this team right now? I mean, it's been a while since we've actually just talked, me and you have talked about how well the Mavs are playing I mean, where have your expectations gone from what you've seen, you know, the last couple?
My expectations are wildly different from where they were at the beginning of the season, not just because, you know, the beginning of the season, they weren't playing great defense. I think they were ranked like 21st or something like that in defensive rating for a while. But they weren't, and they weren't hitting their shots and all that stuff. But, you know, the defensive turnaround is one of the most astounding things I've seen in, I mean, I can't remember how long. I think they were first in the NBA in defensive rating over the last month, and I think they're fifth overall in the league now. I think Bobby Corrala tweeted something out like that. I don't have it in front of me, but the amount of improvement they've had on that end of the floor, especially considering where they were at last year, and the fact that they were able to do it with mostly the same players, is one of the most impressive things I've seen in a long time. It's not – defense is different than offense in the sense that you can have hot and cold shooting nights. You know, you can be a really good offensive team, and then, you know, one night you're off and it loses you a game. Defense is a lot more consistent because it's a system, it's effort, it's not a ball going into a hoop. So if this is something that's sustainable, which is something that looks feasible over the next few months, then I don't see any reason why they should slow down and, you know, not be able to make a pretty big impact in the playoffs. If they play like this in the playoffs, they can beat anybody. And that's just a testament to what Jason Kidd has done over the last couple months.
Yeah, and I saw a really Josh Bow over at Mavs Moneyball. He wrote a piece today talking about, you know, how it's incredible that the Mavs are still able to win these games despite not hitting their three pointers. The 3-point shooting is still very much a problem, but like it hasn't affected their ability to win. That's how high of a defensive effort they're giving on a nightly basis, and it's resulting in a bunch of W's. So, you know, if it turns around and some of these guys can start shooting from deep in a way that we're accustomed to. So, you know, Luka starting to shoot closer to that. And some people say it was an outlier year for him last year when he shot 35%. But, you know, if he could just get up to like 33%, if Tim Hardaway Jr. could get, you know, above 35%, you know, he was a 40% 3-point shooter the last 2 years. And, you know, maybe it's a system thing. Maybe he's just not a fit, you know, whatever the case may be. I personally think he would be greatly impacted by, you know, the Mavs eventually getting Dragic on a buyout, because then, you know, with Jalen Brunson in the starting lineup, you don't have that lack of a secondary playmaker off the bench. And I think that's one of the things that that Hardaway Jr. is really struggling from right now. I think that would help him out a bunch. But, you know, having him,
he won't be on the roster very much longer.
Yeah. I mean, he really might be the odd man out. I mean, you can see, and nobody knows this for sure, but I mean, just from the eye test watching these last couple of games, you can see some very visible frustration from Luka's end with some of these plays involving Tim Hardaway Jr. And it kind of gives you flashbacks to, you know, before the KP trade 3 years ago. He was displaying some of that same frustration with DeAndre Jordan and Wes Matthews, and the next thing you know, those guys were shipped off. So, I mean, I'm not saying he's out here advocating for it, but I feel like that's something that the front office can kind of notice. And it's been very apparent that he's not the greatest fit with what this team is trying to do. So I don't know if there's a team out there that thinks, you know, Tim Hardaway Jr. can get him back to what he was the last 2 years. But he is on a contract that decreases in value every year. And, you know, he's a good veteran presence. And there are some teams, you know, like the Detroit Pistons, the New Orleans Pelicans. They had a lot of interest in Hardaway Jr. during the summer. The Sacramento Kings, they've had interest in Hardaway Jr. in the past. Now, given that's when Vlade Divac was in charge there, I'm not sure if that was mostly from him or, you know, the owner's perspective when they had interest. But, you know, there is some interest in him out there. I just don't know to what extent. Like, I feel like the Mavs would have to pair Jalen Brunson with Tim Hardaway Jr., mostly for salary matching reasons. But, I mean, it would take something like that to trade Tim Hardaway Jr., in my opinion. So we'll see how it goes. But, yeah, last night was big because it assured that the Mavs have the tiebreaker over the Grizzlies. They win the season series 3-1. They're 3-0 against the Grizzlies when Luka plays this year. So it kind of feels like it's one of those things where the Mavs just have the Grizzlies' number. KP outplayed Jaren Jackson Jr. last night. He had 6 blocks. I think that's right. Yeah, 6 blocks last night for KP. Just incredible. The team as a whole had 12. It was the definition of a block party at American Airlines Center against Memphis. So really good stuff from Luka. Really good stuff from KP and the rest of the Mavs. They continue to climb up the Western Conference standings, or creep up, because they still haven't caught Utah and Memphis yet, but they're getting there. So this is going to lead into our next topic here before I start having people on, and I'm kind of skipping over the trade scenarios and saving that for last because, you know, that's going to be the best part. But before we get to that, is Jason Kidd a legitimate Coach of the Year candidate?
Okay, I have something on this. I actually looked something up here, so I'm being productive and participating. So I think if you would have asked me this question a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, I would have said absolutely not. But if things keep going the way they have been over the last, you know, month and a half, and they can sustain that through the All-Star break and through the end of the season, which will be hard, but I think they can do it. I think yes. Right now he's got the 9th best odds per Las Vegas for Coach of the Year odds. I've got that from Vegas Insider. And you look at the other names on the list, and yeah, like there's some legitimate contenders there that probably have a better case than him right now. Monty Williams in Phoenix, JB Bickerstaff in Cleveland, Billy Donovan in Chicago, even the guy at Memphis, Taylor Jenkins. You know, they've had a huge turnaround this year and they've been really good. So, I mean, there's going to be some tough competition, but as long as they can sustain it, I don't see any reason why he shouldn't be at least in the conversation. I mean, I know we talk about postseason awards a lot and how certain Mavs should be in conversations and all that stuff. Luka for MVP, Tim Hardaway Jr. for Sixth Man last year, whatever. But as far as Coach of the Year goes, I mean, that if you can sustain this and you end up at a top 2 or 3 seed in the West, then you have to at least have him as a finalist, I would think.
I agree. And I mean, I think it's one of those things. I'd have to look up the exact numbers for this, but I feel like Coach of the Year typically goes to, you know, coaches who are at the top of their conferences. Whereas, you know, MVP, there's a little bit more leniency with that. You know, you can be the 3rd seed or the 4th seed or whatever it is. And as long as you've got your team in a pretty respectable position in the standings, if the stats are good enough, then, you know, a guy has a chance of winning MVP. But I feel like with Coach of the Year, unless it just comes out of nowhere, you know, it's not like Jason Kidd went to the Orlando Magic and, you know, turned that team into a 27-20 team in the Eastern Conference standings or anything like that. But, you know, I do think the Mavs still have to climb the rest of this season for him to have a legit chance of winning it. His name is going to come up in the conversation. You know, he'll be in the mix there. But for him to have a true chance to win it, I think they do need to end up getting in that 3rd spot, which is going to be hard because they don't play the Grizzlies anymore. Even though they do have the tiebreaker and they're currently 4 games behind the Grizzlies, But they still have Dylan Brooks out. They have Bane out for a little bit longer. You know, they could potentially stumble here in the next couple of weeks. And looking at the Mavs' end of January schedule and start of February, they could end up making up some more ground. So, I mean, it's possible. But, you know, and the Mavs, I mean, the Utah Jazz and the Memphis Grizzlies play each other a couple more times the rest of this season too. So either way those games go will help the Mavs out. So I think that's what it comes down to. If the Mavs are fortunate enough to continue playing the way they are, which I also believe is possible, if they're fortunate enough to continue going up the standings, I think it's a no-brainer that he's going to have a legit shot at winning it. And how crazy would that be, given the given the preseason dread, the doomsday scenarios, Jason Kidd going to be fired by Christmas, all that stuff, and then for him to be a legitimate Coach of the Year candidate, how crazy is that?
It would be pretty cool. I mean, I would definitely eat some crow. I was one of the people who wasn't really happy about the hire. You know, and some of our friends, Kirk specifically, was not very happy about it either. And there's different reasons that people weren't happy about it, whether it was, you know, stuff we're not going to talk about or his track record as a head coach. But he's obviously doing some things different than he was in Milwaukee and in Brooklyn. So especially in Milwaukee, he obviously learned a lot from his time in L.A., and players seem happy to play for him and they want to play hard for him, which is, you know, 90% of the battle. So, I mean, yeah, that'd be absolutely crazy. And I will happily eat crow if it happens.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, people just chose to focus on the past instead of, you know, his previous head coaching stops, instead of what he had done, the progress he had made as an assistant coach and, you know, with the Lakers the last couple of years, because Kidd himself admitted that he jumped into head coaching way too soon. He admitted that he got into it way too soon. He made a lot of mistakes. But, you know, from his time in L.A., and then you pair that with the fact that he has an excellent coaching staff around him, and he's in a place where he's very familiar. He's got his friends, Mark Cuban, Dirk Nowitzki, you know, it's home for him. He's comfortable. So I think all of that paired together has just made it, you know, a really, really good situation. And we heard, you know, before it even started that Kidd was able to get along with players better than, you know, what we had been accustomed to with Rick Carlisle. And sure enough, that has played a big role in all of this. You know, he's obviously getting all these guys motivated on a nightly basis to keep bringing the same effort. Night in, night out. So that's been great to see. And hopefully it continues and, you know, everybody's eating crow. Because, I mean, I said from the beginning, you know, let's give this guy time and see what he can do. But, you know, he wasn't my first choice to be the Mavs head coach anyway. But, you know, that's why neither one of us are, you know, making executive decisions for the Mavs. So we'll see how it goes. Okay. We have rambled for a while now, so we're going to start bringing up some speakers. Our first speaker is Max Turner. Let's see. Let me get you up here. Max, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm working from home, so I just put myself on mute for my work conference call. So I'll be very brief. I just wanted to bring up a quick question for you guys that I was curious. And it sounds like you guys were maybe going to get more into this later on too. And if you are, you know, feel free to just pass it on to later on. But I was wondering what pieces, like in terms of Dragic, you know, making a difference on the Mavs, I was wondering how he would even fit into our rotation. I feel like from listening to you guys, it may be like Tim Hardaway Jr. might have to give up some minutes, if not be one of the trade pieces, if that would even make sense, you know, financially for both teams. But I just was wondering, yeah, would we go to like smaller lineups and have, you know, more guards out on the floor, or is there a specific guard you think he would eat up their minutes? I was just wondering what your guys' thoughts were in terms of how he would fit, you know, besides being like that big brother figure to Doncic, which would, you know, have value in itself. I was thinking more like X's and O's, how he would fit on the floor, like maybe like a Brunson type of role with the ball handling. But I just wanted to hear more about that.
Well, I mean, it's a good question. Appreciate you coming on and asking that, Matt, Max. But I mean, look, it's not going to be one of those things where he just gets a set amount of minutes from just one spot. You know, it'd probably be a combination of him getting a few minutes from each spot of, you know, guys on the bench, depending on how they're playing and everything. I don't think you need more than like maybe 10 to 12 minutes of Dragic off the bench, because they just need somebody to stabilize the lineups when they don't have Luka or KP or Jalen Brunson in the game. You know, because Luka and Jalen Brunson are playing most of their minutes together now. Luka goes out, JB will stay in for a little bit. But you know, aside from that, they really just don't have anybody else who can do the things that those two do. So that would be the thing. You know, get Dragic in there to where if both of those guys need a breather. You know, last night against the Grizzlies, the game was pretty much in hand. It, you know, you thought it was going to be a blowout. Kidd took out both Luka and KP, and I have to go back and look. I can't remember if Brunson was still in the game or not. I feel like he wasn't. Felt like just Tim Hardaway Jr. was out there trying to do stuff by himself. And then next thing you know, it's like a 12-point game when it was a game that should have been a 20-plus point blowout. So, stuff like that to just stabilize that second unit and to make it to where it's not just an automatic turnover. It would just make you feel better going into the postseason. And that's where Dragic makes his biggest impact, is in the postseason too. And he hasn't played pretty much this entire season, so he should have fresh legs. So, I mean, that's where I'm at. I don't think it's just one particular person he would take minutes from. You know, maybe you take some minutes from Josh Green, which I know a lot of people probably hate hearing that, but I mean, I think you'd rather trust Dragic handling the ball for the second unit in the postseason, you know, rather than second year Josh Green, who has been great, but with his passing and everything, but you know, there's just a lot more poise. There's a guy that's been to the NBA finals. I think it adds more than just, you know, a good locker room presence with Luka. But Matt,
yeah, I mean, I obviously everyone knows how I feel about that, but you know, it gives you the sort of JJ Barea type role out of default, even if he's not eating in anyone's minutes. Say your team's in a, you know, a tough spot and stagnant and things just aren't going your way. I mean, Mavs do it all the time with JJ Barea. They just bring him in, he'd shoot the energy up, he'd get the team back in the game, and then things would, you know, start to fall into place. He could play that kind of role, but you know, like you said, Dalton, he also just coming off the bench. I mean, he's not going to start games, but him coming off the bench and you getting to play more Luka and JB together and maybe have JB as a permanent starter, I think would be really ideal because they play really well off of each other already. So having a guy like Goran to come off the bench and sort of guide the second unit and be a guy that can get his own shot and handle the ball and facilitate and do all those things is something that they really need to get another one of, because they don't have it on the roster right now. And
I mean, look, and Jalen Brunson has been great, but we've seen at times this season where he still struggles against teams that have a lot of length, like the Phoenix Suns the other night. He had some really atrocious turnovers at important, you know, parts of the end of that fourth quarter, and Luka had his fair share of turnovers too. But you know, you can't have both of those guys combining for 14 turnovers. And most of Luka's can be cut out, I think. I think it's just more of like a mental lapse with him than anything else. But with Brunson, it seems like most of those turnovers, just going back to that Phoenix game specifically, it was more so about his size, because he was getting trapped and he couldn't see over the trap. and he was just kind of throwing it up and hoping something good would happen. You know, it's like stuff like that is where I think you could benefit from having another reliable secondary distributor, you know, who can be poised in those situations. And it just gives you another option if for some reason Brunson isn't getting it done on certain nights. And I think it raises your playoff ceiling too. So, look, this is something we've been talking about forever. And I do believe that, you know, this is the year Dragic comes to the Mavs, whether it's via trade or buyout. It's most likely going to be a buyout. But, you know, with the way Tim Hardaway Jr. has been playing lately, I mean, and with the frustration you've seen over the last couple of games, it's kind of one of those things like, well, I mean, how do the Mavs view the Tim Hardaway Jr. contract right now? Is it, even though it is decreasing in value yearly, is it something that, you know, they want to play out and see if he can raise his trade value more as the contract goes on, maybe through the end of this season, and see what it looks like during the summer? Or is it something that, you know, they want to try to get off of right now and see if they can open up something for this summer as well? Because, I mean, if you trade him for Dragic, I know – I forgot who it was. Maybe it was Chuck Cooperstein on Twitter. It may not have been, so don't quote me exactly on this. But somebody had mentioned on Twitter that if you traded a guy like Dwight Powell for Goran Dragic, that it would be like roster malpractice given how many games Powell has started this year. And, I mean, look, I get it. I get it in some context because Powell has actually had some really good games this year. But, you know, if you're looking at it from a salary cap standpoint, it's like you're trading for a guy who is going to still be a really good locker room leader. His playoff track record is far and above anybody else aside from what Luka has individually accomplished in the playoffs. You know, his playoff resume is very nice. So, I mean, I just – and also he's on an expiring $19 million contract. So, if you wanted to get off of, you know, Dwight Powell's remaining, I think it's $11 or $12 million next year, if you wanted to consider moving off of Tim Hardaway Jr.'s, you know, long-term deal you just signed him to, maybe that's something you look into. I don't know. But
well, if that were actually roster malpractice, I don't think people would trade players for air. Like I think that's a really invalid and illogical point, if I'm being totally honest. But whether it was Coop or whoever said it, people make moves like this all the time.
I think it was Brad Townsend, now that I think of it. I knew it was either one.
Makes more sense.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Matt, a couple of other trade scenarios that I wanted to just briefly go over here. And some of these were submitted to our Step Back Mavs Twitter account. Some of them we've actually already talked about a little bit, or I've written about on DallasBasketball.com. But the first one I'm very interested in getting your idea, your thoughts on, is the idea of the Mavs adding Jeremy Grant. Because
yes,
it's one of those situations where Jeremy Grant, like, yeah, people are saying, like, oh, well, he wants to be the number one option on whatever team he goes to. That's not what the report was. The report was he wants to be a primary option. He wants to be one of the top options, as a focal point wherever he ends up going. He didn't say he wants to be the number one guy. So in that respect, it's like, okay, well, he could definitely come to Dallas and be possibly the second the second best offensive player on the team. He would be heavily featured there, and he would fit right in with the new defensive culture that the Mavs have built. So with that in mind, and considering what the Lakers just offered reportedly offered the Pistons for Grant, which was, I believe, Talon Horton Tucker, who else? I have to go look. I don't know. See, that's how bad it is. It was THT, some other player that doesn't matter, and their 2027 first round pick. which I mean, the pick, considering where LeBron is in his career, and you know how much Anthony Davis has left on his contract. I mean, that pick could end up being pretty valuable depending on where they end up in the next handful of years. So, but other than that, you know, my proposed offer, when I wrote about this before the Lakers put that in, but my offer was Tim Hardaway Jr., who the Pistons had a great deal of interest in last offseason. Josh Green, who has shown promise this year, and you can basically treat him as a first-round pick because, you know, we don't even count last year as his rookie year because he really didn't get an opportunity. He has this year, and we see what he's capable of, you know, with continued development. He fits the Pistons timeline as a project. And I said the 2025 first round pick. I don't think the Mavs can do that unless they get New York to lift the protection, which I was talking to somebody not too long ago who said that can be done. We'd probably have to send the Knicks a second round pick or something just for their troubles or whatever. But I mean, that's small potatoes. We could do that easily, but either a 2025 first round pick or 2027. So in my opinion, I feel like that brings more value to the Pistons than what the Lakers are offering there. And I might be wrong because obviously I look at some of these things mostly through Mavs goggles, but I mean, I really think that that's something that the Mavs could pull off if they wanted to pursue it. Now, some people say that that's the biggest drawback. It's like, oh, well, what does Jeremy Grant actually want? He's not really the focal point in Detroit anymore either. They drafted Cade Cunningham. He is the focal point of that franchise going forward now. So, I mean, Jeremy Grant, he's not going to be – now he's just on one of the most losing teams in the Eastern Conference standings for the last couple of years, and he's no longer the future of the franchise. So I think it's something that they should definitely look into. He would fit in great with the Mavs, and I think they have enough to get it done.
Yeah, no, I love Harold Perkins. I mean, Harold Perkins. I love Jeremy. Sorry, that's a breaking Aggies news, so I got my names confused for a second. I love Jeremy Grant. I think that he's an excellent fit. I think that the Mavs can definitely beat that offer. It's just a matter of, you know, whether or not they're willing to pull the trigger. I mean, they're not the most aggressive team when it comes to trades. They've made a few good ones here and there. They've made a few bad ones here and there, but that's one that I think can make a real difference. And it's a realistic possibility. It's a realistic trade. It's not a, you know, what's the word? Pipe dream. It's not a pipe dream. It's something that they could really put together. And I know that Jeremy Grant might not want to come to Dallas necessarily as his first choice, maybe. I'm sure there's other places he'd like to go, different head coaches he'd like to play for potentially. But as far as on the court basketball fit, I think it's great. And I think he'd sort of help this team take a next step. You know?
To me, it feels like Jeremy Grant would be like the new age Mavs version of Josh Howard. If they ended up getting him, that's what I feel like Grant would end up being for the Mavs. So I'm all for that. Another one I want to talk about here briefly before we get out of here. This is another big one that I kind of threw together, and I don't really know if you consider this a pipe dream or not, Matt. It is kind of, you know, getting up there, you know, away from, you know, what the Mavs would actually have to give versus what they're willing to give up. But I mean, I'm just kind of surveying the NBA landscape here, and you look at the Sacramento Kings, and they're about to, unless something changes in the second half of this season, they're on pace to break the NBA record for most seasons having missed the playoffs. So the playoff drought is about to be an NBA record. And things just haven't worked out with this current roster. There was a report the other day that pretty much everybody not named De'Aaron Fox or Tyrese Halliburton are available for the Kings. And specifically the three players, Harrison Barnes, Buddy Hield, and Rashawn Holmes. And we've talked a little bit about, you know, Harrison Barnes, but and what a potential reunion with him might look like and what the fit is like now based on what it was back when they had him in the first stint. But I feel like right now, if the Mavs are going to make like a really big splash for multiple players, I feel like that's probably their best option, is to, you know, try and put together something to get both Buddy Hield and Rashawn Holmes. And I know people are just, you know, I've seen some people suggest like, oh, well, you know, Buddy Hield, he's not really shooting that much better than Tim Hardaway Jr. I mean, he's a 40% three-point shooter for his career, Buddy Hield is. And even in a down year this year, I think he's still shooting 38% from three, where Tim Hardaway Jr. is at 33%. And I think he's shooting, what, 38% from the field? So I don't think there's a comparison there. I think it's one of those situations where you put Buddy Hield in a situation with the Mavs where there's a lot of defense around him, and, you know, his offense would be greatly appreciated in Dallas, and it would help things out a lot. And then you have Rashawn Holmes, who is basically like a – how do I want to put this? He's basically like a supercharged Dwight Powell. He's what Dwight Powell – or what the Mavs think Dwight Powell is, you know, from an overall perspective. He brings high energy all the time. He has a very, very nice little push shot that he gets in the paint and does. It's pretty efficient. He's good with the pick and roll, which Luka would be very happy to have. So I just feel like if they're going to make a big splash for multiple players, like a bigger trade than just, you know, adding one guy, that's probably their best option. And I'm curious to get your thoughts about if you think I'm way off here, if it's something the Mavs can actually pull off, or if I'm just kind of banking on the Kings being the Kings like they have been over the last decade plus.
Well, Kangs are always going to Kangs. But look, that's obviously a little bit more I wouldn't say that's a pipe dream, but it's a little bit more of a steep ask, I think, than Jeremy Grant, only because you're asking for two players there. You're asking for two guys that will be highly desirable around the trade deadline for the Kings, that, you know, maybe they could flip both into separate deals and get more assets, whatever they want to do. Either way, they're still going to be a mess going forward because they're the Kings, but it's, you know, it's one of those things where if they are going to be aggressive, which like I said a minute ago, they're not always the most aggressive team, but if they are, then that is a, you know, a fantastic package to get. It helps fix your 3-point issues. It helps fix your defense issues, your inside issues. And it gives you, you know, two guys that are really kind of wasting the prime of their careers away in Sacramento, and gives them an opportunity to come to Dallas and compete for a playoff spot and perhaps more.
And I mean, you know, Holmes isn't necessarily, neither one of these guys are necessarily great defenders, to put it nicely, but you know, the energy that especially Holmes plays with, and you know, if KP is going to have the defensive impact that we've seen so far this season, you know, since he's actually healthy again, you know, if he's going to have that kind of impact, you know, you can play a guy like Holmes with KP, I think. Now, you know, I've said it many times in the past, even though it was with a different head coach, different style and everything, that, you know, KP at the five is really the way to go. And then, you know, have a small ball four, you know, put Dorian Finney-Smith at the four and, you know, have a bunch of guys that can shoot around him. But as offensively challenged as this team is from the perimeter, I don't really know if that matters as much. You know, even Maxi Kleba has just been – I can't remember the last time I felt confident with Maxi taking an open three in a game. So, I mean, with all that in mind, and given how many times the Mavs have actually started Dwight Powell with KP this year, I don't see why a KP Rashawn Holmes front court couldn't do some numbers, you know, just given the activity and how versatile they could be with, you know, KP can do the pick and pop, and then you can do the pick and roll with Holmes, and he's got that little – he doesn't have to roll all the way to the basket because he's got that nice little, like I said, that little push floater. I think it would work out well. It would give him another option, another wrinkle. And, you know, instead of having Dwight Powell on the floor where he, again, he's had some games that he's played really well this year, but he's still somewhat of a liability on offense. So it would add another wrinkle there, and it would help raise that playoff ceiling and hopefully – help the Mavs end a decade-long drought of not being able to win a series. But anyway, that's gonna. We still got some more trade stuff to talk about, but it's gonna have to come on the next one. And we still have about a little over 2 weeks until the NBA trade deadline. So I'm sure a lot more stuff will come up, and you know, we'll have a lot more content, both written and pod related. To talk about Mavs trade stuff with you guys. So, Matt, before we go off here, Mavs Warriors tomorrow night, last time they played, the Mavs held them to a season low, 82 points on dirt night. Klay Thompson is back, but they're missing Draymond Green, who is basically, you know, he makes everything work for them defensively. They're still good defensively, but, you know, he's kind of like the engine of that. How do you think the Mavs are going to do in their next matchup against the Warriors?
I think it'll be really interesting to watch because, you know, the defense that they've been playing obviously worked very well against Golden State the last time they were out. They didn't have Klay back, though, in that game. They did have Draymond. So it'll be interesting to see how it works with Klay back in the lineup. But, I mean, this will be a great test to see if they can continue, you know, with that defensive pace.
I'm looking forward to see how the defensive – and our guy Grant Afseth wrote about this when it was announced that Klay Thompson was coming back. You know, I'm interested to see how it affects how the Mavs guard Steph Curry, because they held him to, I believe, 14 points in that last matchup, and they were just hounding him. You know, it was – they were doubling him every time and basically just, like, daring the rest of the Warriors to beat them. And with Klay back, I mean, I haven't looked at his numbers since he's been back, but you can't really afford to do that as much with him back in the lineup. So again, it helps having Draymond Green out, you know, at least from Mavs' offensive perspective. But I'm interested in seeing if they can keep up the same kind of defensive defensive intensity with Curry, with Klay Thompson back in the lineup. But as good as the Mavs are playing, I mean, they're capable of winning any of these games. If they win it and they come out of this, you know, this last three-game stretch against Phoenix, Memphis, and Golden State going 2-1 with a bunch of what should be easy wins coming up. I don't want to jinx it, but, I mean, again, how they're playing compared to some of the other teams on the roster coming up, like Orlando again, OKC again, the Mavs have a real chance to stack up some wins here at the end of the season. But, guys, appreciate it. You guys go like, rate, and subscribe on all your favorite podcast platforms. We are doing a ticket giveaway for Mavs Pacers on January 29th. It's Rick Carlisle's return to Dallas. It's two lower bowl tickets. You can go to, I believe it's pinned on my Twitter page, at Dalton_Trigg. If you want to go and enter that, we will be announcing the winner for that one after Mavs Warriors tomorrow night. So you still have some time to enter that contest or the giveaway if you want to. But, guys, we appreciate it. Y'all have a great rest of your Monday, and we will see you next time. Y'all have a
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.